Thank you, Kristen, and thank you everybody for taking time to come today and participate in this symposia as we look at some of the soil health measurements and especially with emphasis for land managers. As Kristen kindly said there about working on soil health, soil quality for several years, what she was really saying is I'm either a dinosaur or an old fart in this area. So, you know, take your choice on this. But in thinking about it, thinking about our land managers, and I'm talking to the choir in this case. But a point that I always like to begin with is why have we embarked? Why have I spent the last three decades thinking about soil quality, soil health, which you'll hear me use interchangeably and some people periodically ask me, what is the difference between those two? And I say, well, you have to go back to a 1993 publication where we have one of the tables that says soil health is what the farmer can feel through his or her sole of her boot and when they walk across the field. The farm community knows what soil health is. What soil quality was in that era was what the soil science community would reluctantly, and I stress reluctantly, tolerate talking about. But a lot of things were done in getting off to the early start, and of course the reason why, and a lot of it comes from mentors like Bill Larson and others, is that we need to worry about soil health because it's the soil resources that are critical for sustaining human civilizations. And when I use the word sustaining or sustainability, I always focus on three key points. It has to be economically viable, it has to be environmentally sound, and socially acceptable. And at the producer level, if a practice, if a management strategy, if it doesn't pay the bills, you know, we can have the best ideas from behind our desks, and they're not going to go anywhere if they don't work. Obviously, the environmental soundness, we want to have an agriculture that is productive without impacting the soil, water, air resources. And the socially acceptable, it's not only urban versus rural communities or things like this. Socially acceptable is also how an individual producer might regard making a management change. Are they comfortable making it? That personal decision there. That's also part of the background. The key points that Diane and I'd like to make today are that soil health is not a new concept. We've learned a lot about soil health and its assessment during the past three decades, but there are several challenges and barriers that still remain. And the key, as we'll get toward the end of this, is that the future that we need to move toward is a combination of public and private investment in such things as national soil health surveys, basic and applied indicator research, data management strategies. All of these are needed to ensure fundamentally that our soil resources are maintained and are sustained for future generations. As I said, concern for soil resources is not a new concept. And on those days when I get a little too cocky and think about being a leader in soil health, I pull out Danny Hillel's book and the article that he put in there in the book, Out of the Earth, Civilization and the Life of Soil. A quote that Plato wrote 2500 BC and had Crustaeus proclaim to the residents there. And I'm not going to go through and read this, but if you have not seen this quote in Danny's book, I really encourage you to do so because it really hits on what we're talking about in terms of caring for our soil resources. And land that was productive, you know, by doing the wrong management decisions, has been wasted away. And the water, it disrupts the water cycle, the productivity cycle, all of those factors that are so eloquently captured in it. Come on up, there's chairs up in front here. Take a moment to come on up and have a chair and take a load off. But building on what Plato wrote there, the question and why we're still attacking and tackling and working toward the soil health, soil concepts, is a question that I often raise with my audiences. Are we as humans willing to change what Plato, 5,000 years ago, folks, was telling us we needed to change? Obviously, a couple pictures from the early years in the United States with soil erosion and the Dust Bowl. But here's just a few years ago in Midwest. Every field, every year, you're going to find sections that are still being eroded. Across the knolls of the Midwest, where we're using uniform land management across everything and excessive tillage, in my opinion, the knolls are turning whiter. One of the most frustrating things in the 28 years that we've been at it was originally the Soil Tilth Laboratory, now the National Lab for Ag and Environment. I think every one of us on the team there tend to look at the landscape across the Midwest. And much to our chagrin, much to the fact we've written a lot of excellent how to manage soils better, these white areas are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Combination of wind erosion, water erosion, tillage erosion, loss of soil organic matter, loss of productivity, all of those things that come into soil health. The side effects, runoff, contamination of our water resources, sedimentation. This happens to be a slide. You can see the little lines there. Those aren't fence posts. Those are corn stubble pieces there. When they planted this field earlier in the year, the farmer was comfortable enough running the planter close to that river, and it had stream bank erosion and essentially undercut at least the outside row that's still shown there. So yes, the question is, are we willing to change our soil and land management? And just a few more pictures about our recent choices. This is one that came from my home area in Wisconsin. Before my brother passed away, he had shared this picture with me. And a few farmers I showed this picture to said, well, why is that combine going up the hill? Because the point I made is it couldn't even climb that hill. They said, well, it should be going across the slope. My brother informed me, well, you dummy, those are the hedgerows. He had to take those off before he could go across the slope for the rest of the field. As they went across the slope, the slope was so steep, the combine slides down. They could only fill one dump to the grain wagons before they had to snake their way back down there. A land use decision that was made to put row crops in the wrong areas. Stover harvest and a lot of the work we're doing with bioenergy feedstock production, this is an excessive harvest situation. There's far too much bare soil following that Stover harvest. Bioenergy, it's another application of what I do with soil health, is an important potential third crop, but you have to manage it so that you don't destroy your soil resources, that you don't do what Plato warned us against. Still, we in the United States especially, we're enamored with tillage. It's a cultural thing. Had the chance last month to go to Brazil, and again we shared the discussions how in the late 60s, early 70s, many of us that were students at that time, we brought a lot of Brazilian scientists in. They did their graduate work in conservation tillage. They went back. They had severe problems with erosion, but they adapted it and made it work. And now they come back to visit their alumni areas, and they say to their colleagues, well, why are you still tilling? It works. In the U.S., we're still enamored with our tillage. But fortunately, with regard to the soil health, the past 30 years have led us to some new government, non-government organization, and private industry investments that really do provide hope that we are maybe going to begin to listen to what Plato talked to us about 5,000 years ago. The NRCS Soil Health Division was created about 4 years ago. The Soil Renaissance by the Farm Foundation and the Noble Foundation that led to the creation of the Soil Health Institute. The Soil Health Partnership, Monsanto, Nature Conservancy, National Corn Growers, and most recently several of the agronomic initiatives in the country extended originally a 5-year program to a 10-year program to look at on-farm work with cover crops and its impact on soil health. Recently in the 2014 Farm Bill, they created FFAR, Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research, and they've got seven challenge areas that they're working on. One is soil health and thriving farms. And so there are some meetings coming up this week on Wednesday morning. a couple different sessions when FBAR is going to be talking about where they want to take public input on where they want their work with soil health to go. And most recently, a soil science interagency working group that's preparing documentation to help with the administration changes to help make sure the decade of the soil, the year of the soil, is not lost and that awareness is sustained from administration to administration. So what do we learn about soil health, soil quality in these years that we've been really focusing on it? Well, you're going to see the terminologies have changed from the different ones. That you can see it oftentimes in soil conservation, soil conditions, soil quality, soil health, human effects on soils. But fundamentally, the goals have remained constant under these different terminologies. As my grandfather used to say, care for the soil, and it'll take care of us. There are qualitative and there are quantitative assessment strategies. Soils differ and require site-specific evaluations based on both the inherent and dynamic factors. A lot of the inherent factors that we came to understand are those that were traditionally used in our soil land capability classes that the NRCS and Soil Survey and those fixed properties. Dynamic factors being more the ones that are temporal, changing, under the effect of immediate or short-term management decisions. In assessing soil health, the criteria will vary based on the soil use. And by soil use, I'm really talking about the soil function. Are we looking at the soil to produce the biological productivity, to filter and buffer, to partition water resources, to sustain a microbial community, to support engineering structures? All of these are different uses, as we, as soil scientists, are well aware. But they have to, if you're going to assess it, you have to know how you're aligning your assessment criteria. Those functions, however, can't be measured directly. They have to be measured through indicators. And the key in a soil health, soil quality assessment, is those multiple indicators and they must reflect at least the biological, the chemical, and the physical properties and processes that go on in that soil. So when people come to me or send a paper to me about a soil health assessment, and they've only talked about one of the physical measurements or one of the chemical measurements or one of the biological measurements and want the title of the paper to be soil health assessment or blah, 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 I say, no, you've written a paper on this soil physical health assessment or soil biological health assessment. To be soil health, in my opinion, you have to have all three integrated together. This, again, it's a timeline that I put together, and this presentation is being recorded. You can go back and take a look at this if you want in the back. But prior to the 70s, there were many excellent soil scientists, and especially that was where they were looking at human effects on soil formation. And then in 77 is when we began to see the terminology soil quality, soil health emerge Workington and Flesher did a presentation in Japan and under intensive agriculture and basically endorsed Alexander's 71 proposals that we needed to begin to look at soil health, soil quality. Through the 90s, you know, the initial definitions, Diane and I had some of the initial framework works. Canada was involved with the health of the soil. The SSA was involved with a lot of it. 2004, Susan Andrews served as a postdoc initially and then eventually had a good career in NRCS, did the first on the SMAF, or the Soil Management Assessment Framework. The Cornell Soil Health Test was developed and implemented. Harold Van Ness and the team there at Cornell had early discussions with us, and I hope I hit the date pretty close there, Harold. That was around 2005 or plus or minus a little bit there. And we then began to apply soil health, soil quality to the SEEP, the Conservation Effects Assessment Project ones. That was a spinoff of what came out of the National Academy in 1993 in the Soil and Water Quality, an agenda for agriculture. We brought soil quality assessments into that program that had been predominantly dominated by water quality assessments. And then we've been using it in a bioenergy feedstock, the partnership, the Renaissance program, and internationally a lot of the soil health, soil quality assessments have gone on. Now, there's many ways to assess. Some of the first things that came out during the past three decades were the qualitative analyses using scorecards. In this case, it's such as the soil health card from Iowa, which has certain things in there of structure, crusting, aggregation, residue decomposition, root growth. A similar one was the Georgia Soil Health Card. Again, it has crop growth, erosion, residue, color, infiltration, a number of different things. Pretty much observational type approaches, qualitative type approaches. There were also the semi-quantitative one. John Duran was a major leader in the early years of soil quality, soil health, and created his little soil health test kit here, the black box, his medical bag, so to speak. It had a lot of use in a number of ways. We actually applied it through the original Soil Health Institute on NRI sites across the country, in major land resource areas, and went out and worked with the group to get hands-on measurements. We're beginning to get qualitative, some semi-quantitative measurements using the soil health kit. Another big part has been the discussions, getting the people involved with assessing soil health and looking at the soil pits. That happens to be one in the Central Valley of California. And as we were doing that soil pit, looking at the impact of the soil water content post-irrigation of a tomato crop, across the road they were doing deep tillage. And it was kind of fun to point to the farmers and say, what do you think that individual is really having an effect on his soil? Because it was also a tomato site. You knew it was irrigation. And the soil, subsoil was so wet, it just smeared. So he's investing the diesel fuel. He's investing the time. But he wasn't shattering the soil like they might have been thinking they were. So a lot of things came out of those early years in assessment, even though it was semi-quantitative. Another one has been that has come out of originally out of New Zealand through Graham Shepherd's work, then picked up by a number of people in the International Soil Tillage Research International Soil Tillage Research Organization, or ISTRO, Bruce Ball over in Scotland, and then some of the VES, or the Visual Assessment of Soil Structure, which is, again, you go out, it's a sampling, you break it down, you get some of these aggregation sizes, the structure. All of these are tools that came out in a semi-quantitative manner to look at soil health and soil quality. And we're going to move really fast now, Kristen. I get to the quantitative ones with the different sampling, aggregates, microbial biomass, earthworms, and things like that. When I mentioned the soil functions, we talked about those before that we have to be assessing and making our assessments for. Those functions have the inherent factors, that's the soil forming factors, the dynamic factors that really focus in on a better assessments of sustainability. This is a graph I tossed up. Dr. Tim Parkin put this together back in about 93 of all the things on soil function. This is one that Lakeisha Odom just sent to me not too long ago from the FFAR effort. All these different things that soil health is continuing to function. We're still struggling with how to put it together, with how to link all of these things. But that's the role of soil health. Some of the remaining challenges, indicator selection, sampling depth and spatial distribution, which indicators to measure, how to interpret those indicators, how to combine or balance the soil functions, and then obviously the data management strategies. Numerous indicators. Some papers will have as many as 60, 70, 80 potential indicators. Again, the point I usually emphasize is we need to have at least the physical, chemical, and biological represented. Soil management assessment framework that was put together during this period, again, your management goal based on your functions. Those functions have to be through indicators. This is where you come about with the minimum data set idea and how you assess those different soil functions. You then use scoring functions, and you can get individual scores for those indicators, and then you can look at them individually, or you can put them together in an overall index value. I think Diane's going to touch on this one also, but this just shows those scoring curves. If you're in an altisol, 0 to 2%, and a malasol, 0 to 6%, the same shape of the curve. If you got 2% organic matter in an altisol, you've got a pretty well fully functioning soil from the organic matter perspective. You got 2% in an Iowa malasol, you're down here in a very degraded soil, threatened soil situation. A lot of discussion. What do I compare soil health to? Cemetery, a pasture, a forest. It doesn't make any difference. We can't back up in time. You measure soil health where you are right now. What's the baseline? And the management practices you're using. 3 to 5 to 10 years down the road, you do that assessment again, and you say, am I at least sustaining it with the management practices am I doing? Am I grading? Or heaven help us if we're degrading. What's needed for further development? We're looking at using the SMAF and getting a rigorous review of the curves and the other indicators, looking at the scoring functions to go deeper into the soil profile. Initially, it stayed at the surface because that's the data we had, the resources we had. More efficient data entry and incorporation of other indicators, especially those associated with erosion and structure. And so where we've been over the past 25 years and where we want to go, and the goal remains, is we really want to have healthy soils, healthy landscapes, and vibrant economies. So with that, probably I used up all my time, Kristen, but we'll entertain a question if there's time.